This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good Wednesday morning to you, SB Nation Radio. It's SB Nation AM. You know, we're going to start this hour. If you don't like Duke, if you're one of those people that just have always not liked the Blue Devils for whatever reason, all right, then this is the story for you. They lost last night in double overtime to Wake Forest. You probably knew that, but we talked about this when Duke lost to North Carolina State. Remember that game in Raleigh where the Blue Devils lost by 22 points? And I said, hey, this is something you have never seen. And that was because Duke had lost by the most points ever against an unranked opponent. So the 22 points that North Carolina State's, you know, the margin of victory was something Duke had never experienced. They never experienced a deficit like that before against an unranked opponent. Well, yesterday's game had a similar vibe to it because Wake Forest scored 113 points. That's the most points Mike Krzyzewski's team has ever allowed in his entire career. That ties him with that mark, and it's also, in Blue Devil history, the second most points they've ever given up in any game ever. Now, it did go into double overtime, so there's a caveat there, but hey, I'm just throwing out that these are two things you've just never seen under Mike Krzyzewski, and they happened within about a week of each other, so hey, you got that going for you. But listen, these things are going to happen to you, especially when you got the target and everybody loves to play against you. And Wake Forest, the students celebrated. They rushed the court. Brandon Childress, who was hitting shots for them when he was missing shots early in the game for the Demon Deacons, was carried away on the shoulders of the players. One of those exciting things. This is the one thing, is one consistent thing about Mike Krzyzewski and his Blue Devils all through the years since they started getting good in the 80s and became a team of, you know, you listen, Duke, either love him or hate him. There's really no middle ground for a lot of people. Every time they lose on the road, the fans storm the court. It's been that way for 30 years, 30 years plus for Mike Krzyzewski and the Blue Devils. And, you know, that's what happens. They'll lose on the road because ACC is a tough place to play. Even when they play teams that have really good records and are really ranked well and have great seasons going on, when they lose on the road, fans go nuts. And next thing you know, they're pouring onto that court. And Krzyzewski's looking for some police to get them out of there.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Alrighty, good morning. Welcome to SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. Tony D, Ron Culver. If you'd like to hit the show up, you can at Tony D Radio on Twitter and at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Love to hear from you. All right, so as I mentioned at the top of the hour, Duke lost last night in double overtime. Good game. I only caught the end of it, but nevertheless, it was still good. I don't know. I always like these. I always like it when Duke loses, but I know it doesn't really matter, you know, because, you know, Duke's Duke, and they'll either make a run in the tournament or they won't. This won't have anything to do with it. But it's still always interesting to me if you're, you know, when you have a coach like Mike Krzyzewski who has consistently great teams and a great program where he's always ranked, he's always got a team that's built for national championship level good, right? When they lose on the road, it can be dangerous. I mean, When I'm younger, I loved it. I loved seeing all that. When I get older, I look at that now going, man, somebody's going to get hurt. I see it every single time. Every single time. And I always wonder how does that get old after a while? Because they don't lose on the road very often, but they play in the ACC. And as like I said earlier, it doesn't matter whether you're the defending champs Virginia or you're as good as Florida State is or Louisville is or, you know, when North Carolina is really good. It doesn't matter. It's like whenever you're playing Duke and you beat them at home, people get a little crazy. They go overexcited because it's a win against one of the top programs in college basketball history. And all of a sudden the students pour in and you're Mike Krzyzewski. You're used to this. You've had 30 years of this, year in and year out, constantly doing this. But you've got to think that your first thought is my players. I got to get to my players, right? I got to make sure they get out of here. I got to get them to the tunnel. I got to get them in the locker room. I don't know if some crazy frat kid from Wake Forest is going to try to take a shot at such and such. And next thing you know, we're in this melee in a court. And it does, you know, every single year he has to deal with this. Every year he has to put up with this. But this has been, like I said, historic in terms of the two losses for Duke. They, you know, the loss, the 22-point loss to North Carolina State, this double overtime loss, giving up 113 points to Wake Forest. But in the end, the tournament is coming up in a couple of weeks. The ACC tournament is coming up, and you know they'll make their move there, and they'll sharpen stuff up here. But I think he's got to be a little concerned with the way his team does react to certain situations, whether it is not being competitive, like he talked about against the Wolfpack a week ago, and in this particular game where they just gave up too many points and they lacked a little effort on, you know, the other side of the ball, if you will. But still, you know, you're going to get these moments when everyone's gunning for you, when a season is going, you know, awry and it's not going your way as Wake Forest is. You want these moments. You know, North Carolina had its moment, right? When North Carolina had their game against Duke, what was it, about a week, 2 weeks ago, where it was an epic finish, right? Duke came back and sent the game in overtime and then won it in overtime on a last second shot. North Carolina is having a season that's just completely down the drain, completely away from them, completely unexpected, but yet explainable given some, you know, their injuries to some key guys. And then you have an opportunity to just put a little feather in your cap, just a moment where you can have something bright to happen to you in a season in which Roy Williams gets in front of the camera every single time he can to talk about how terrible coach he is and how awful he is. And it's just such a sad, sad state in Chapel Hill. And that got taken away from him by fantastic play by the Blue Devils down the stretch. So when you have a team like this, again, and it doesn't even matter what Duke's record is, it doesn't matter where they're ranked, you just know that Mike puts together a great program year in and year out. He has a championship-level team every single year, and when you beat them, it doesn't matter what you're doing. It's one of those moments that is, you know, slapping on the bulletin board all around the school. But I still love the enthusiasm for the college kids when these kind of things happen. I mean, it's still there. It's still kind of fun. So again, it's, as we get closer and closer to the tournament, I'm still looking forward to see how it's all going to play out with the number one seeds. Because man, we see these teams are just losing these days, left and right.
Everyone's losing.
But you know what? I always look at it this way. It's probably the best time to lose is right now.
Yeah, if you're going to sort some stuff out, this would be the time to do it.
Yeah, you know? I mean, you always learn more from a loss. When you got a streak riding, like when San Diego State, I know San Diego State came out and said they wanted to remain unbeaten all the way through. And it's, you know, but there's added pressure to that. Especially
yeah, there's
when you get to the tournament.
Yeah, there's added pressure that you don't need because then you got to focus. Well, the one part where the real pressure lies, once you get to the tournament, the NCAA tournament, it's not about staying undefeated. It's just winning for winning's sake. But when you get to the Mountain West Conference tournament, that's when it becomes a little tricky because you're going all out to try to preserve your record to try to win the tournament. And then you get to the NCAA tournament, you might run out of gas here or there. You don't know. We've seen the conversation at the conference tournaments, and there's always been a good sports debate about it, is whether or not there are good losses in your conference tournament to teams that are relatively comfortable with where they are. Oh, sure, they could go from a 3-2 or a 4-3, you know, in terms of seeding, but in the end, they're not losing sleep over that. But when you see a team that's in that position where they've had that kind of year and they get to the conference tournament and they lose in the quarterfinals or they lose, you know, whatever, all of a sudden it's like, well, that's not terrible. You know, they don't have to play this weekend. They can go regroup, get ready for Selection Sunday, and then start their run when the tournament starts. That's always, coaches will never admit to that, right? Because the coaches will never say, oh, no, this is great that we lost and we get to move, you know, we get to go take a break for a little bit. They'll never say that. But you do wonder behind closed doors if some of them are like, you know, we probably needed this kick. You know, it's not, you know, like I said, I'm not losing sleep that we didn't win this. We'd love to win a conference tournament. We're all about the conference. We're all about supporting the conference and the level of competition that we have in here. But you know what? Let's be honest. We were struggling in certain areas, and this might be a wake-up call for our guys. I don't know. I mean, I wonder behind closed doors if they'll ever admit that.
Probably never.
Never.
Not wanting to lose, but being comfortable with losing. Yeah. Like, just go, when you go back and you go, all right, it ain't the end of the world.
It would be refreshing.
Yeah. Certainly. Wouldn't it be great?
I mean, like, on the one, if, like, say San Diego State, right? You don't want to lose in the first round. You want to get a couple games. But if you lost in the semis.
Sure.
You made your mark.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
you may have lost the one seed. But that's okay. Because, I mean, really, when the tournament comes down to it, it doesn't matter what if you're a one seed or a 16. I mean, it helps out in that first game. But if you're able to win, it's all about just keep winning.
Yeah, just keep winning. Just
doesn't matter
just
who you play.
Don't blast your way through this thing. But, it's funny because I'm always wondering about, like, a Krzyzewski or a Boeheim, as, like, they get older and they're, like, the sun is setting on their career. If they just go, you know what? I'm okay with this. coach, all right, just talk about this loss. Quarterfinals. You got a pretty good team coming into this thing. He's like, you know what? It's all good. I'm sorry. Normally I would tell you how much I hate this and how much this drives me crazy. And we got to get back to the drawing board and give you all those sports cliches. But you know what? I'm 79 years old. I'm probably retiring in 2 years. I'm just going to lay it all out. I'm good with this. Yeah. I'm cool. My team, we gotta learn from this, but we'll learn from this and we'll be good. See you Sunday when we find out where we're gonna go play as a 3 seed. Thanks. And just takes off from there. You know, normally it's all the same. All the same. I tell you, man, it's funny. It's you go when you get into these tournament settings like the NCAA tournament, it's so funny when you watch the coaches not react the same way as fans do. When I was in Denver in 2004, Syracuse Jim Boeheim was in that region, and they were playing and they were moving out of Denver into the next round, and they were playing Alabama, who I think upset Duke, if I'm not mistaken. But Alabama had a big upset, and so naturally, the question was, hey, you get to play Alabama, and Boeheim's like, so if they could beat them, they could beat us. Like it was like. And you start realizing, oh yeah, they don't think about it the same way we do. Like they like we go, hey, you're going to move on to the Elite Eight. Like why wouldn't you beat this 10 seed that just made it through their region? But they don't think like that. They go, no, wait a minute, hold on. If they beat them, yeah, they could certainly beat us. Like if they pulled that upset, they are absolutely capable of knocking us off. But one day you'd be like, thank God we were really worried about them. And now they're out of the tournament. So we don't have to worry about them. But yeah, we're really happy. We're really happy to play the Lumberjacks of Stephen F. Austin.
Exactly.
We're thrilled. Thank you so much. Thank you for knocking off Kansas, whatever team you knock off. We really appreciate that.
Hey, well, I can't remember who the second round opponent was that UMBC faced.
Oh, yeah. Right.
They had to be ecstatic.
Oh, sure. Are you kidding me? Because... again, you're preparing for both, but you're not thinking about both, right?
Yeah,
the opposing team, you're just like, chances are we're playing Virginia, and this is what Virginia does really, really well, right? And then you get UMBC, and you're like, oh, boy, we got to go back to the whole drawing board and figure all out.
But at the same time, you're going, but, those are second-tier players. So,
right,
in the back of your mind, you're like, if we play our game, we should be able to handle them.
Right. Right, exactly. This is one of the reasons why I hate to be a spoiler, and I know a lot of you have probably heard me say this before at this time of the year. This is why I don't like upsets late in the tournament. I don't mind them in the beginning. I think they're fun in the beginning.
Yeah.
Like 15 knocks off a 2 or whatever. I think those are great. I think those are
destroys
fun and those are part of the tournament.
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, but I'm not a huge upset. I know the stories are great, like Loyola Chicago is a great story and everything. But I remember George Mason getting to the Final Four, man. They were like deer in headlights. They got blown out by Florida when UConn would have been a better opponent for the Gators.
Yeah. And it would have made for a more entertaining game.
Right, exactly. So I'm not really a big, I don't want it to be all Cinderellas. I want Cinderellas to a point, and then afterwards I want the best matchups I can possibly get.
Yeah, you want Cinderellas to the Sweet 16, because that's fun.
That's about right, yeah, that's about
and then
right.
Once you get to the Sweet 16, it's like, all right, let's buckle down. Unless it's like, say, a 5 seed that probably should have been a 3.
Yeah, no doubt.
They were like, okay, no, we can deal with that.
And I know, some of you will hit me up with some of the great stories of college basketball, that tournament team. Yeah, I know. Right. Listen, I get it. No, I'm not denying those were good. Don't get me wrong. It's just that, if I had a chance to watch Duke versus Kansas in the Final Four, I'd rather have that than Duke versus Stephen F. Austin. It's just, I'm sorry. That's you can. I like, and the Lumberjacks are good. So don't get me wrong.
Well, the Lumberjacks has turned us off, but
that's right. Well, I love you because they pulled off an upset a couple of years ago that I got to give them credit for.
Yes,
but you know, again, it's just me. I'd rather see that because you know those are the programs I want. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I get the stories. I get the stories. It's not
the stories are.
I'm
fun.
Not a grouch. That's what I'm basically.
The
trying
stories
to get
are
at.
Fun, but you know, we much rather see Alabama versus Georgia or Alabama versus Auburn or Clemson in the final. In football, than we would want to see Auburn versus Wake Forest.
Oh sure, that's you know, right.
We're
that's right.
There like, why are we watching this? Because this isn't going to be entertaining.
And by the way, if you are a low, you know, a high seed, whatever it is, well, I don't know, what is it, low seed, high seed? How do you, the teams that are like in the double digits.
Yeah.
If you're going to get to the Final Four, just win the whole thing for us.
Exactly.
Okay, so we can talk about you and have a good story, make a movie about your story, all that good stuff.
Remember you for years and years to come.
Years and years and years. Exactly right. All right, coming up, the Combine yesterday had a lot of NFL teams and a lot of NFL teams talking. What did Matt Rhule say about Cam Newton? Next, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Colbert, here's Tony D.
All right, have a car problem but don't know where to go? Maybe you're not close to home when your car breaks down, so let O'Reilly Auto Parts help with the O'Reilly Auto Parts Shop Referral Program. Take the guesswork out of finding a great shop wherever you are. Call an O'Reilly location near you or visit O'ReillyAuto.com and click find a repair shop to find a reputable repair facility or service center for your repairs. O'Reilly Auto Part, better parts, better prices every day. All right, so Matt Rhule, the new coach of the Carolina Panthers, hit the podium yesterday at the Combine. This is why a lot of the media is there, by the way. When you see the swarms of media that are attending the Combine, this is one of the reasons they're there, because these NFL teams will have these like impromptu press conferences to talk about where they are right now, what they're looking for, draft ideas, the upcoming season. So, you know, Matt Rhule spoke for the Carolina Panthers about the upcoming season. And of course, what's the big topic in Carolina? What are they going to do with Cam Newton? And Rhule is all for Cam Newton being part of the team if he's healthy. But that's the big caveat, isn't it? If he's healthy. So this is really tricky for Carolina because, as we talked about this during the regular season, the Panthers would probably, in all likelihood, like to move on from Cam Newton, right? He's going to be a free agent in 2021. They don't want to, they're not looking to keep him. They're not looking to re-sign him, but he's hurt. And so he becomes a problem to trade because, one, he's got an expiring contract coming up at the end of the season going into the 2021 season, and right now he's hurt, and we don't know what kind of playing shape he's going to be in when it's opportune for a team to realize what they have. So the Panthers can't really get rid of him until he's healthy, but they don't know when he's going to get healthy, right? They're already talking about a couple of months away from doing football-related activities, but nobody has been able to define what a couple of months away actually means. Will he be ready by training camp? Likely. Will he be ready by OTAs? Maybe. Maybe. And that's a big if. So that's the dilemma that they're in. But this is where sort of this uncertainty cloud is hovering over the franchise. And that's not really a good position to be in if you're the Panthers, who have gotten rid of Ron Rivera, bringing in Matt Rhule. Look, Matt Rhule is coming in, and if you're Dave Tepper, you are handing this team to him. Build it the way you want. We talked about the reason Ron Rivera got fired in the first place, right? It's more of an analytical thing. Right. He's not an analytical guy. Dave Tepper wants to run the entire organization under an analytical mindset. And that includes his coach, including additional staff in the front office to help in this process. All right. So here's this organization that wants to do everything by some sort of mathematical metric. And the one outlier that destroys that right now is we don't know if our starting quarterback, a former MVP, a guy who led us to the Super Bowl, is going to be healthy enough for the one season he has remaining on his contract. Can you imagine a worse scenario for a team that is trying to do everything absolutely locked by some sort of formula, all of the variables that I just mentioned in the starting quarterback? all the variables that I just said, right? You don't even know if he's going to resign. You don't know if you can trade him. You don't know how healthy he's going to be when he is healthy past the year, right? Past the new year into what the NFL calls its, new season. So it's past that. So teams may not even be interested in trading for him that might have been interested in him if he was healthy, let's say, January, right? Or maybe early February. And because of this injury and this timetable that doesn't exist, there's nothing even down. They just have absolutely no idea. The only thing Matt Rhule can do, the only thing he can do is just talk positively about the situation and just give us a sort of cliche answer. I mean, we don't know in the next 4 months where this quarterback is going to be, where Cam Newton is going to be. And so it's hard for Matt Rhule to get a handle on exactly how he wants to build this team offensively. Do I have Cam Newton and some of the skills that he is able to bring to that position, or do I not? And if I don't, then what kind of offense can I work with? What kind of offense can I put together? It's too bad, but that's the kind of position that they're in. Like I said, I think they would have loved to have traded him. Right, I think they would love to have moved on with the idea of somebody else. It doesn't matter who, whether they get a young person in the draft or whether they go with a more veteran quarterback. But they had two quarterbacks this past season, and neither one of them worked out the way they thought. Kyle Allen came on strong, right? Looked like the heir apparent, looked like he was taking over that job. He struggled down the stretch, and then Will Greer came in. He showed absolutely no ability to play at the NFL level whatsoever. So you're sort of stuck with a quarterback in Cam Newton that's going to cost you a lot of money, a quarterback that is got this injury that is going to be coming off of, where you don't know if it's going to affect him or not, right? You don't know if it's going to be lingering effects, and you don't know how it fits into what Matt Rhule wants to do designing the offense, right? Maybe he wants a quarterback with a different level skill set. Maybe he can't utilize some of the things Cam Newton wants to, is able to do. Who knows? But this is a really weird position to be in. So the only thing that they can do is what they did, which is basically say nothing, say a standard line, leave it up in the air, and roll with it however it comes down in the next couple of months. I mean, he's been out since September. I mean, he stopped playing in what, mid-September with that injury? Had surgery in December on the foot. And now his status is so up in the air, they don't know exactly where they're going into the season with and into a new regime from the top on down. It's got to be impossible to be processing all of this, especially if you're new to the whole system like Matt Rhule is. Well, of course, and here's the thing. Matt Rhule was never going to say anything else other than, of course, we want Cam Newton, right? Of course, we want a healthy Cam Newton. That's exactly what he was going to say.
But it's such a tough situation to just kind of walk right into.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, you have so much going on to try to build a team on your mind, and this is, this is always going to be agenda number one, story number
one. Yeah, right. Imagine if Mike Tomlin quit for the Steelers, right? Like he quit. The new coach coming into the Steelers would be like, well, Ben Roethlisberger's my guy. Of course he is, right? Like, there's no question. Right, we're going to wait for Ben to get healthy, and here's our guy. This isn't that.
No.
This isn't that. This is a team that's going, if healthy, he still may not be the guy we want. If when he's healthy, we still might look to get rid of him.
That, and it's the ugly side of the NFL business.
Right, exactly.
You're looking at that going, that's a big number.
That is a very big number. Now,
What if we're able to offload that big number? What can we get for it?
And again, you're talking about a team that is wanting to know those numbers really, really well. Well, so listen, don't take Matt Rhule's quotes about what, expects him to be on the roster. This is not where the organization is. The organization still has to process all of those external factors into what they want to do with Cam Newton. Healthy, still tradable. Not healthy, well, they got to figure out what they're going to do. Healthy and they're not trading him, that's another option. They can obviously use him in 2020 as their starter. There's three possibilities here. And we still do not know any direction that this organization wants to take under a brand new coach and an owner that wants to do things a little bit more analytically than other teams do. It's going to be interesting to watch Cam Newton's fate in Carolina.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, NBA and college basketball in full mode, and you're getting into the baseball season, so get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, BetOnline. Sign up today, receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, and start betting college and pro sports. Every spread, every total, winner or loser, and even those prop bets are on the table. Get the fastest to market odds, updates, payouts with our new sportsbook partners, BetOnline. Head over to their website today. Use your mobile device. Join, use the promo code SBNation55. That's SBNation55. Receive your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, so Joe Burrow apparently put it to bed yesterday, and I'm going to say apparently because, I don't know, maybe it's something he just says today and does something tomorrow. He said if the Cincinnati Bengals drafted him, he will play for them. So that puts it to bed, right? That's done. No more speculation on this. No more, hey, man, you never know, man. You should go to a team that's built to win and built to, you know, be take you to the Super Bowl early in your career.
You know when it'll be over? Day two of the NFL draft.
Yeah, when he's not making a big push to go somewhere else.
When he's been selected and there's no trades on the table.
What if he is selected by the Bengals on that day and he takes the boat across and Roger Goodell a hug and then he holds up the Bengals jersey and he goes... And then they go, oh, look at that. He doesn't have a smile on his face. He doesn't seem to be all that enthused that he's holding up a Bengals jersey.
You know what? Maybe he'll go the way of Kobe Bryant.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe
Kobe
so.
Bryant, I mean, if you see all the draft day pictures, what jersey and hat is he holding up?
Yeah, that's right.
The Hornets.
Yeah, that's right, the Hornets. That's right. He's like, yeah.
So maybe it'll be one of those scenarios.
Remember Eli's face when he had the... Oh, God.
Yeah.
I hate this. Crumbles it up,
here.
Throws it in the corner.
Told you I didn't want to go here.
Yeah, I didn't want to go here. I think he's, you know, here's the thing. If you are Team Burrow, that's not where you're going to answer that question.
No.
That is not where you're going to, like, if that's your strategy behind closed doors, that podium yesterday in Indianapolis, that is not where you leak that out. So let's just say for devil's sake, like devil's argument here, you know, let's go to the other side. Let's say Burrow's camp is like, we are going to get ourselves out of Cincinnati, come hell or high water.
Yeah.
So they're going to say, Joe, come here. Well, will you play for the Bengals? And let's practice that. Now you want to look him in the eye, kind of get a little smile, and then say, I will play wherever I get drafted. Of course I'll go where I'm. Great, great answer. Okay, let's practice that a few times, and then we'll get you out there. That's what you would do.
Yeah, maybe practice it with different accents. We don't
That's
know.
That's right. Practice it with
know.
Different accents.
We don't know.
Yeah. But in all likelihood, I think this was a manufactured story. I think a little bit comes from his dad. But I think for the most part, I think he's just going to go with the Bengals. I think he's fine.
You know what? If we put ourselves into his shoes, I mean, maybe it's a little different because if you and I were given that opportunity, we're like, I'm just glad to be in the NFL. I don't care what team it is. You're going to pay me how much? To just play football professionally, I'm in.
Right.
But I don't know, maybe there is a little bit more pull on their end where they're like, you know what, Bengals, that's going to be a tired program for the next 4 or 5 years. You know, maybe the Dolphins look better, or maybe, you know, the Raiders are unsure about Derek Carr. You can be the face of a new franchise in Vegas.
That's an interesting point you just made, because when people say that, when they say, like, if it was me, well, it's not you in a way because you haven't been brought up in a system of excellence. Like, you haven't been brought up to know your talent. Like, when we do the hypothetical, I would do this, it's only because you need a genie to sprinkle some talent dust on you instantly to become a level quarterback, right?
Are you saying I don't have the talent to be an NFL quarterback, Tony?
But here's where it's different for Joe Burrow. He just recently got this level of good and attention.
He just recently rubbed the lamp.
Right. This isn't, again, I mean, I hate to bring up my old analogy, but he was like Robert Johnson at the crossroads. He literally was doing hardly anything at LSU that first year with the Tigers, right? Had that good Fiesta Bowl. But this, all of what he's done his senior year has been relatively new in terms of the explosion of expectation that Team Burrow now has, right? He went from one of the guys you can pick for your franchise in a quarterback class in 2020 to being the clear guy that people would want no matter which team would have the number one pick. Right. And that's a recent development for them. That's different from, let's say, Trevor Lawrence or even Tua Tagovailoa who had that kind of thought process going into his, you know, season at Alabama, where there was an NFL conversation of tanking for Tua. And obviously the injuries and whatnot and the Joe Burrow explosion sort of changed that. But there's, you know, if you're in Trevor Lawrence's camp, there is going to be a belief that you'll be the number one pick when you get out. But for Joe Burrow, this is a relatively new phenomenon.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to throw a hypothetical at you. Maybe it's outlandish.
Okay.
Right? But we just talked about Cam Newton in the last segment.
Right.
Could Carolina put an appetizing package together to ship Cam Newton to the Bengals with maybe something else in order to get that number one draft pick?
Okay, that's a good question. You would have to really, really sweeten that pot.
It's funny that we're saying that because we're talking about
Newton, a former MVP.
We're talking about a quarterback who took a team to a Super Bowl, proven himself.
A proven veteran, right? Former MVP.
Who may or may not have some years left on him. We don't know. You know, I mean, we really don't know the extent of, you know, is Cam Newton going to become one of those players that's just injury prone from here on out?
Right, right.
But the only reason why I'm bringing this up is because then it marries Burrow with Joe Brady again.
Very true, very true. And I'm, you know, if I'm on the Carolina Panthers, that's a phone call I make, right? Yeah. What would you take?
Well, why wouldn't Joe Brady say, hey, you know what? I mean, you know, a lot of people credit me the success for Joe Burrow. I may not have been who I am without Joe Burrow. Maybe it's the two of us need to continue this path together.
True, true. I certainly would want the comfortability if I'm a coach, especially one that's heading in, you know, going to, you know, try to continue on the legacy of what I built up at LSU. I would certainly want that comfortability rather than,
yeah,
all right, who are we going with now? Who am I supposed to turn into an NFL star? Am I supposed to all of a sudden take Will Greer and turn him into an NFL starter or fix all the things that we saw what was wrong with Kyle Allen later in the season? Good point. I mean, but yeah, it's a conversation I would make. If I'm the Bengals, though, I go nowhere with this. I would go, no, we have to start. Like, you're going to send me a guy with a contract that I got to renegotiate at the end of the year who's injured, even though he's a veteran. I'm looking for a franchise quarterback that we can put on billboards for the next couple of years.
Yeah, we're trying to move away from the red rifle. We already have a veteran on staff.
Exactly.
But, so, but if I'm Carolina, I would try to figure out a way. Maybe it's packaging, you know, we'll send Cam Newton and Will Greer.
Yeah, because we are in a position with, like I said, with Carolina where they, you know, they're in this, as we talked about, all right, we don't know Cam Newton, somebody else. What I mean, we don't even know where our quarterback situation lies until we can get the health evaluated of our you know, current number one on our roster. If you're Cincinnati, you know, you've already looked at Andy Dalton and said, that's it. Right? I mean, he got benched for what, Ryan Finley during the season for no reason than just to see what Ryan Finley had. Right. And then he got his job back, but they're now saying, look, we got to move on. We've got to find another quarterback. We have got to find the next face of the franchise. We've gone through this. We had Carson Palmer. We've had Andy Dalton. And now it's Joe Burrow's time. So if you want us to take away from that guide and that mindset and that where our entire operating system in terms of marketing and all that is going to be built on the guy we select in April.
But you
got to sweeten that pot.
I mean, it's so funny because Joe Burrow to the Bengals just makes sense.
It does, you know, make sense. Yeah.
Kids returning home.
Exactly.
You know, the hometown team. I don't know if he grew up being a Bengals fan. I really don't know. But I mean, it's the hometown team. It's where, what, it's like 2 hours away from where he grew up.
Sure.
A place that, after he won the Heisman, he was that whole region. He was able to raise thousands and thousands.
Yeah,
of dollars
remember
for
that?
Food shelters.
That's right. That's right.
And now he, you know, now we're sitting there debating whether or not that's a good fit for him, whether or not he even wants to go there.
I think the big question for me, if I'm Joe Burrow, is my coach, right, Zach Taylor. I have no idea if this guy can coach in this league or not. I have no idea what's going to happen to him when, you know, we go through a year or two and they realize, well, maybe he can't be a head coach. Maybe he's just a positional coach right now. He's still very young. He's 37 when he got the job, probably 38. And You know, so that would be my big red flag. Who is my coach and who will be my coach down the road? He's probably looking and saying, look, I'll probably can evaluate my game and adjust my game to anybody coming in. But one of the things that hurts young quarterbacks in the NFL making the transition is the inconsistency is who is guiding you, right? Do we change offensive coordinators a lot? Are we changing head coaches a lot? And, you know, we saw it with Marcus Mariota in Tennessee. And I'm sure he's like, look, I'd like to be under the guidance of somebody a little bit more stable. But again, I can't choose this. So, and in the end, I want to be the number one overall pick. I, you know, that's like, if I play my cards where I don't want to be selected and they go, fine, we won't take you. Fine. We'll take Justin Herbert. All right. Fine. You win. I lose millions and millions and millions of dollars on the table. My goal is to be picked and then moved. Right. Cause then I can still be a number one pick to somebody, even if they move me. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. As we continue along, it's SB Nation AM. Coming up, what's Tiger serving at the Masters? Oh, it's delish. Next, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, this hour of SB Nation Radio is presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, so Tiger Woods, listen to this, SoCal boy. You're going to like this. You ready?
Yeah, yeah.
So Tiger Woods has got a champion's dinner to prep.
Yes, he does.
Right?
So this forgot is the, about that.
Right? He's got to put this together. So the he's won the Masters five times. So this is the fifth time that he's gotten to serve the dinner. He's got to pick the menu for the champion's dinner.
Has he changed it up every single time?
I think he has.
It's a shame because don't you wish that if you're a golfer, you're coming in, it's like, oh, Tiger won. You know what we're having.
Yeah.
Prime rib again.
See, and a lot of these golfers, go to like their roots, right? So like Sandy Lyle in 88, he won the Masters and he served haggis, right? That sheep's stomach, liver, thing, whatever that's called.
That would have been the worst time to be invited.
Right? Because he's like,
you can't turn the invitation down, right?
Well, you can eat something else. I had to look that up because I was like, they're not eating haggis. Like if you're Jack Nicklaus, are you seriously eating haggis? Like, right. You just go, look, I'm Jack Nicklaus. Give me a steak.
I paid my dues.
No, I ain't eating this. You know, Seve Ballesteros famously had a Spanish dish. Let's see. There's been a couple of others that really try to go to their culture, go to the local, their local roots, right? A dish that is very popular in their home country or home area. And the best, these cooks at Augusta, they're the best in the world. Some of the best in the world. They're going to go make it. They're going to find it and make it. So Tiger Woods, when he won the first Masters in 97, in 98, when they got back, he had cheeseburgers, French fries, and milkshakes because he was a kid. I thought that was fun, right? I'm a teenager. Well, I'm not really a teenager. I'm like 21 years old. So he thought that was cool. So now that he's won here, this is what he said. Quote, born and raised in Southern California, and with it playing a part of my entire childhood, we'll be having steak and chicken fajitas, plus sushi and some sashimi on the deck. So that's going to be on the menu at Augusta National for the champion's dinner.
I don't care. That sounds good.
That's good. Steak and chicken fajitas?
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't throw some fish tacos out there. Isn't that a SoCal thing? Fish tacos? What else could he have served in SoCal? To honor the L.A., San Diego
area. Whatever it is, you have to put it on a taco.
That's right, right?
You can throw a fortune cookie in there. Not little people know that's where the fortune cookie was.
Really? Invented. Okay, that's because he was. And then he was asked about dessert. Now, this is where it gets a little sentimental, so I got to give him a little credit. He said, we're still debating milkshakes. And the reason was because he said one of the greatest memories that he had was in 98, seeing Sam Snead and Gene Sarazen, you know, the old guys, the old master champions, sipping milkshakes on the patio. He thought that was kind of cool, so he wanted to kind of revisit that. Bernard Langer had Wiener Schnitzel in 86. Nick Faldo had fish and chips for the first of his three champions dinner. Sandy Lyle had haggis. Mike Weir had elk. Mike Weir from Canada had elk, wild boar, and Arctic char.
Well, that makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it?
Here, Charles Schwartzel in 2012, he's from South Africa. He had barbecue with monkey gland sauce, but Schwartzel said there's no monkey in it. So I don't know why would you call it that.
That's so bizarre.
If it didn't have monkey in it. Is there another one that's like that? Isn't Welsh rabbit? There's no rabbit in Welsh rabbit. Is that true? I don't know.
I have no idea.
I don't know. I think that is the case. Somebody on Twitter hit me up with that. Is there any rabbit in Welsh rabbit? Because I think there isn't. So it's one of those dishes that just had the name. So, but that is what Tiger Woods is going to serve. That sounds good. That sounds, when Phil Mickelson won his last Masters Championship in 2010, I think, Seve Ballesteros had just passed away. So he did a really cool thing. He honored Seve at the Champions Dinner by serving one of Seve's meals from his Champions Dinner. He just had him recreate that. I thought that was kind of cool. That was kind of neat. But it's a very neat event. They pass around the autograph stuff for the Champions Dinner and everybody signs away. Can you imagine, like, you know how sometimes the Masters, like if you look at the Masters Championships, you see like some of the big names in golf, but then you see the guy that you never hear from again, the guy that just won it and it was like, oh, won the Masters, just had a good week. And then like Danny Willett and whatnot. And this is what they get to do for the rest of their lives. Every year until they die, they go to this. They get to don the green jacket no matter what they do. They can be out of golf. They can retire. They can never win again. But if you win the Masters, every year you get to go to this dinner, have the green jacket, and rub noses with the best.